Homajnanatimadannasyajnananjanashalakaya chakshurunmilitam dhena tasmai shri gurave namah.
I'm really deeply touched that you're here tonight and to be here with some of my dear friends, Dhanadhar Swami, Kashyapa Prabhu, who I have, could just say right back at you. And the very fact that you're here, that you've taken your time, you can be elsewhere, to give your attention to this, is really an indication of your level of advancement in spiritual life, to give focus. It's not, people like to see things blow up and cars running off the road and going round and round and lights flashing and stuff. But those who are spiritually balanced or eager to advance on a more subtle level, to sit in a room and discuss topics, spiritual topics, takes a certain kind of acumen. So I always feel deeply appreciative, and especially with you here at the Bhakti Center. It's a rarefied atmosphere. So my deep gratitude to all of you. Hare Krishna. So let's, if you're up for it, chant the Maha Mantra for a little while. There's a directive given by the great teacher of Bhakti, Jiva Goswami, that whatever kind of endeavor you make in Krishna consciousness should be preceded by the chanting of the spiritual mantra and ended with that also. So if everything doesn't go wrong in the middle, at least you don't lose anything. I'm going to start with a mantra, which is a mantra of gratitude, a prayer of gratitude to my spiritual teacher. And then just after that, a mantra that is honoring the incarnation of Krishna who brought the chanting of God's names and made it available to the whole world. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his associates. And then after that, we'll go into the chanting of the Maha Mantra, which is the special mantra for this age that anybody can chant. And it is recommended for everybody in this age as the panacea and the main process for advancing in spiritual life.
First of all, first speaking much more, I'll say a prayer in Sanskrit to my spiritual teacher, which says that I was blind, but he opened my eyes, just the way a person who is blind and then receives some medical treatment, and then all of a sudden they can see. Sometimes nowadays with medical technology, you see this happen. I've seen videos of this person seeing for the first time, how grateful people are. So it's an ancient mantra. It goes, Om Ajnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurunmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. And this offering obeisances is the spiritual path means to inquire submissively from those who are more advanced and then can help us. There's a recognition in that there is somebody more advanced than me, and that if I'm submissive and open, then I can receive something very valuable. It's a matter of having an open heart. And tonight, we have just a short amount of time, but while we're here together, I'll just make a few points from my realizations and experiences about various keys that I've found to fulfillment in my own life. It's important to have keys or principles that you can keep coming back to. And in the hurried lives that often we live, we can be distracted in various ways and then forget about the various principles that actually help make us feel fulfilled. Or we forget even that that's a goal of life, to be fulfilled. I'm often looking, what's the next thing to do? this may be a common saying, but years ago it was a revelation to me when a friend of mine said, come on, are you a human being or a human doing? You know, are you just going to keep doing things, or are you going to realize that you exist and take advantage of looking within? How's the temperature in here, by the way? Is there a way to make it freezing cold? Yeah, air is good. It helps nourish the brain. And so I'll make a few points, and then at intervals, I'll ask you for your reflections. Means anything that you hear that sticks with you. If you hear a point that sounds like something you could take along with you, then I'll just ask if you'd reflect it back. So just act as if you're, you know, with family, sitting around a table after dinner or something like that, and you feel free to speak up. There's nothing too formal here. And in the exchange of ideas, the points get augmented and they go more deeply. Does that sound like an okay idea? Say yes. Okay. So, first of all, fulfillment indicates that there's something to fill up. And this is a concept I often think about, how each one of us is a container. We're walking around and we hold things inside of us, not just physically, like, you know, we drank water and we're carrying around a belly full of water. But on a subtle level, we do carry things around. And they are contained within a certain area, whether their mind, or sometimes we say within the heart. Even in poetry, we say, you've filled up my heart, and so forth. It's definitely a concept that we're familiar with about being containers. And interesting, you know, a container has content. And also the word content, you can say content. It's spelled the same way. And what kind of content you carry within you, which is one of the themes of what I'll talk about tonight, is how contented you'll be, how you'll feel content. What's your content? Now, we wouldn't be talking about this unless there was a way to adjust the content and to therefore feel more contented. So the first and most obvious key to me is gratitude. And in thinking about gratitude myself, I've realized that it's a practice. It's not necessarily something you have to wait for, but we are, existentially, if we look at what we really are, we're conscious beings. I'm sort of skipping over a lot of philosophy because we don't have a lot of time, but we are conscious beings, and as conscious beings, the Vedic texts, the texts on bhakti, say that what we are is little appreciators. That's what we do for a living. We appreciate stuff. There's a lot of stuff to appreciate, isn't there? Like what? Okay, thank you. And what else? What else do you appreciate? You nodded your head. Just being here, being alive, or being here? Just being alive. That's pretty good, because you can do that all the time. It's like, hey, I'm alive. I appreciate that. That's nice, too. Oftentimes, when we're just about, we think we're not going to be alive, and then we are alive, is when we realize the value of being alive. I recently was take a 17-minute nap in the afternoon, and just when I was waking up, I lie on my left side, and I just became aware of my heart beating. And I was sort of in that half sleep and waking up, between sleeping and waking up, halfway state, and I started having a conversation with my heart. And I was saying, thank you very much for doing what you're doing. And he spoke back to me, and he said, well, you're welcome, but you really don't have to thank me because it's my duty. I've been asked to do this. But then he said, I can be asked to not do this at any time. I just want to remind you. And it was a profound experience, actually, because I felt a personal relationship with my heart and an appreciation that he was doing a duty. And my friend Satyadev Prabhu was a paramedic for 20 years. And whenever he hears a siren, he said, somebody's either checking in or checking out. He also told me that, I said, how many people did you save in your life? He said, I never saved anyone. He said he saw so many times that people who were supposed to die lived, and people who were supposed to live died. He said, all I did was prolong their suffering, in many cases, you know, by keeping them alive. But this is much to the point. We don't have a lease. We didn't sign a lease. At least I don't remember doing that. Do you? When you were born, did they give you a little pen? Or ask you to put your baby footprint on a little thing? Here, stamp here, here's your lease. Here's how many years you have here. So in talking to my heart and thinking about, you know, this could stop at any second, there's a kind of alertness that came into my mental system that this is real and this is special that I'm here and that all this is going on. It's really a gift I've been given. So I really appreciate your point about you appreciating just being alive. So my point is that gratitude is a practice. In fact, in the most famous of all bhakti texts, the Srimad Bhagavatam, the teacher, Shukadev Goswami, begins by pointing out to his student, Parikshit, King Parikshit, all the ways that one can look at the universe and be appreciative. Just seeing that... You all vote if you change your minds. Or actually, it was my idea, but... all the ways you can look at the world and appreciate that something's being done for me. In fact, it's one of the ways to realize that there's a benevolence about the universe. I mean... avocado is my favorite food in the world, and it's something when I look at it, I marvel at it. Who made packaging like that? It's I don't want to go into all the details, and I'm not a product designer, but I know a good package when I see it, and that's a good package. And what's inside? And then you go through that. There's nothing tastier and more nutritious, by the way, than an avocado. But when you get inside, there's a seed. I mean, who thought of that? And that's a gift. It's really a gift. And when I'm looking at the world from one item to the next and seeing the gifts, seeing everything as a offering, it's something that's unique and wonderfully presented, and who thought of it? And why is it here? Why is it available to me even? This instills a sense of gratitude. And my contention is that when we're in gratitude, it doesn't matter what other kinds of things are going around us. It doesn't matter what we have at the moment or don't have. When we feel gratitude for what we do have, or even a tiny molecule of gratitude comes into our heart, then we feel content in that very moment. And it's something that we're asked to cultivate in the bhakti scriptures. In fact, this gratitude is the doorway to take us to the connection to our original divine source, Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That this is the first key to inner fulfillment. So there's a couple subtle points to this. One is something that I read in the a purport in the book called Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, and that is a statement by the translator and author of the purports Srila Prabhupada, where he points out that different species of life have what he calls varying appreciating capacities. Everyone has a capacity to appreciate at a certain level. Then he says, when you come to the human life, you can expand your appreciating capacity. You have a huge capacity to appreciate. And really, that is the gift of human life, that your appreciating capacity can be expanded. And the more that you expand it, the more that you'll feel fulfillment. And I heard a kind of a clever statement years ago, but I kept it because it works for me. And that is, whatever you appreciate, appreciates. As in, because there are several definitions of appreciate and or appreciation. As an example, if you put money in a, I hesitate to offer any financial advice here, but if you put money in a conservative instrument like a CD, you're going to get appreciation over time. That means you put it somewhere, you've invested it really, and then it grows. And what we have, the gift of appreciation or gratitude, when we invest it in something, it grows in our life. It becomes more. In fact, Voltaire once said that when you appreciate the good qualities in others, then you open your heart so their good qualities can come into you. And sort of switch gears so abruptly in metaphors, but it's almost like a download. There's a way in which you know, when you're appreciating somebody very deeply, like a teacher, somebody who knows something. Today, I was driving back from Connecticut with Kashtuba. I was sitting in the back, and he was telling me everything he knows, trying to condense it within 1 hour. In 1 hour, he was giving me a summary of of all his teachings about a specific subject matter I was very interested in. And you know, I was sitting next to him, and could have been airdropped, but like, for the sake of the metaphor, like a wire from one fire wire or something like that. And, you know, I was just getting everything because I was really interested in what he had to say and appreciating the knowledge that he had and the way he was presenting it and all the qualities in which, you know, he had acquired from pursuing the knowledge and so forth. And when I stepped out of the car, I was a new person. I got something. And this came from appreciation. My content had changed. And therefore, I was more content. Change your content, and you become more content. So, appreciating capacity is something to expand. And the other aspect of gratitude, an offspring of gratitude, or one might say the result of cultivating gratitude in a very specific way is that one develops a service mind. Service mind. Say service mind. Yeah. If you develop a service, there are a lot of different states of mind that one can be in, right? Yes? Like what? Grateful. You give me another G word. Starts with GR. Greedy. You could have a greedy state of mind. You could be grumpy. What else? Huh? New York state of mind. Yeah, that's right. There's a lot of states of mind that you can be in. And so one of the core teachings of bhakti that comes through the original bhakti texts, all the way to the great masters who teach bhakti, they say, this is the one switch that will change your life, to develop a service mind. In fact, they just say, just flip the switch and say, I'm a servant. I'm going to serve. And as soon as you do that, as soon as you take a service state of mind, then immediately you start to feel content. It's counterintuitive, because I'm in a defensive position. I always think that unless I protect all my assets, unless I look out for myself and make sure I take as much as I can, then I'm not going to be happy. I won't get enough. But oddly, the moment I think, how can I give to others? How can I fulfill others' needs? I go outside myself. I grow, actually. And this is the key to fulfillment, to develop a service mind and think, how can I do good for others? Even Dale Carnegie, in his book, which is a must-read for people who are doing heavy management, it's called How to Stop Worrying and Start Living. And in it, he says, when you feel the greatest anxiety about something that's happened in your life, then change your state of mind and think, how can I go do something for someone else? And as soon as you start thinking in that way, then you immediately start to feel relief. You go outside the tiny globe of your mind and out into the big world of possibilities. Next are a few things to drop off and let go. One is to abandon envy. Envy is the opposite of appreciation. There's a way in which I think, why does this person have it and I don't? Don't cheat yourself. This is the way in which we can enter the realm of complete anxiety. So give up envy. And the other is don't carry grudges. Has anybody ever had a grudge or kept a grudge? Where'd you keep it? In your heart? Do you know what a grudge is? It's a fierce little animal. It's got snarling teeth and a twitching tail. And most people carry it under their arm. And everywhere they go, it snarls at everybody. And it's a burden to carry around. So how do you let a grudge go? You just go to the edge of the forest and let him go. Let him run off back into the forest where he came from. Grudges are something that we carry. It's not necessary, but it blocks our ability to appreciate others. And also it stifles our sense of inner fulfillment. And the real trick is just let it go. There's a story in the Srimad Bhagavatam about letting go. It's such a simple thing. There was once a hawk, and it had found a piece of meat, and it was carrying it up into the air. And just as it was getting altitude, two larger hawks assailed it and grabbed onto it and said, "Give it up or die." And so there was a sage down below, and he just happened to be watching this happen. And the smaller hawk just let it go and then flew away free. And the sage who was watching this then thought, okay, that's how you do it. If you've got some attachment that's weighing you down, or some grudge, or some sense of envy, then let it go. There's no one that says you can't let it go. And then finally, in the category of gratitude, that be appreciative even of, this is a more advanced level, but try to be appreciative even of frustrating situations, or when you're given a test in life, a challenge. Does that ever happen to any of you? Three people. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. I heard this is another mantra I learned. I was listening to an interview, and this man was from Oklahoma. And a very intelligent, scholarly person. And he was speaking to the interviewer, and he mentioned, he said, "We Okies," he called himself an Okie. And the interviewer was being careful to be politically correct. He said, oh, you can't say that because people might take offense at, you know, an Oklahoman being called an Okie. And so the man said, "Oh, well, I am an Oklahoma, but I understand what you're saying." And then he said the mantra. He said, "I live to be corrected." And then he continued. And I appreciated that very much, that mantra, that one can take that with one anywhere in the world and see that whatever situation comes up, take it as, "I live to be corrected." Not that we let somebody bully us or we don't take care of things that need to be attended to properly. When there's some transgression, one must do that methodically. But one can still take the lesson from it and appreciate that this was for my benefit. Even in states of frustration, when frustration comes, it is an opportunity to see another alternative that I never saw before. And if it wasn't for frustration, I wouldn't have seen it before. This is the first key on my keychain to inner fulfillment, gratitude. And now we'll take a few reflections from this first category. Anything that you heard that's stuck in your mind about this first key to inner fulfillment, gratitude, or any of its subtle points that went with it. And we have a microphone to pass around. And just what a reflection is a reminder, is anything that you heard, any point that's stuck in your mind. It can be one word or one sentence, but it's just a concept that you're taking away from this. Yes?
Upgrade your content to more content.
Yes. Upgrade the content. We are containers. Our hearts are containers. Our minds are containers. So if you want to feel more content, then change the content. Thank you. What else?
I talked about the paradox of becoming a servant to be more free.
Yes, thank you. Can you say more about why that's a paradox? Or what a paradox is, or anything else?
Yeah. Well, most people, they feel a servant position is a position where, you know, you have no control, no freedom. You know, it's a very kind of low position, traditionally speaking. But by accepting the servant of a position, you don't have to worry about yourself anymore. You're free to serve others, and, you know, I don't know what to say.
Yeah, it's just that one point. There are volumes written about this. I'm so glad you brought it up. And that it is a paradox is an indication that it's a subject that requires a little bit of a study and contemplation. So thank you for bringing that up. But it is a place in which our great teachers say that if you just flip the switch and say, I'm a servant, then you'll notice immediately the change in your sense of fulfillment in life. This is a fact. Thank you so much. A few more. Yes.
You mentioned to abandon envy, because envy is the opposite of gratitude.
Yeah, abandon envy. Can that mic be turned up just a tad? Is it possible? Or does it throw everything off? Yes, go ahead.
You mentioned that we should abandon envy because envy is the opposite of gratitude. And so I just appreciated realizing that. The why,
yeah.
Why not me, or why don't I? To compare and despair just takes us away from being appreciative of what we have.
Yeah, you think about abandonment. There's a lot of issues about abandonment. You know, I was abandoned. How do you abandon something anyway? Anybody know? What do you do to abandon something? What? Go to the edge of the forest and just walk away. I mean, you see something abandoned. It's not that hard, really. It's a thing like it was abandoned. What did you do? I just walked away. You don't really do anything. You just don't deal with it anymore. You abandon it, and it's a neglect is another tender, loving neglect. That's how you raise orchids. Orchids don't like to be fussed over. They like to be put in a corner and just leave them alone. Don't talk to it. Don't move it around. Don't water it too much. Just leave it. And so abandonment, neglect, all these things that seem pejorative, they actually, in the process of bhakti, if you learn when these things like greed, envy, grudges come up, and you're just like, okay, I'm going to abandon you. I'm neglecting you. Sorry. Too bad. What else? Yes. Here comes the mic. And the reason we like to use the mic is because there's a lot of devotees online listening. They like to hear your question.
The point which has touched me is...
Uh-oh. Try it again.
Instead of thinking about anxieties, think about how will I go and serve others or help others.
Yeah, instead of thinking about your own anxieties, think about how will I serve others. There's the great Saint Prahlad Maharaj talks about how the moment one starts to think about one's own pleasure, that's the minute you start suffering. You don't even have to try for it. You just have to contemplate it. And the opposite is true. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, the moment you start thinking, how can I serve my original divine source, Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and all the others who are his dear parts and parcels. And as soon as you start thinking like that, then it's a switch is flipped, and now you start to feel happy. Simple thing, gratitude and thinking in a service mind. And service, again, it's an overflow of gratitude. When you're feeling great gratitude, then you want to do something about it, right? This is, you move from this state of just sheer appreciation, then it reaches a certain level, you can't stand it anymore, and you want to go out and demonstrate it, like how grateful you are. You just, let me serve somebody. I want to serve the source of these gifts that I'm getting. That's real happy life. And if you can stay in that flow, then you'll be happy all the time. Yeah. I have a friend in Japan, and a very expert person, and had all kinds of high-paying jobs in his life and things. And at this point in his life, the place he lives and the amount of time he has and the age he's at, he needed to have a job, but he went out look for it, and all he could get was cleaning toilets. Of course, it's a different thing. Toilets in Japan and New York are different, I assure you. I won't go into any more details. but he pulled a couple of us aside and he said, "This is the best job I ever had in my life." He said, "I feel so peaceful and happy and unaffected by the miseries of the material world. I'm cleaning toilets, you know." And it's an indication that the happiness and fulfillment don't come from the places that a lot of people are looking for them. It's a simple thing, right? Yeah. Thank you. Cut two more. 1, 2, 3, 4 more. Yes.
Speaking about how you like avocados, yes. You mentioned that they have a perfect package.
Yes.
Talk about the better package.
Yes.
Then you said the most charming part. And also there's a seed, and that's a gift.
It's right on you. I mean, you see such a gift. If somebody gives you a gift that's perfectly packaged, my sister, she passed away 3 years ago, but when she gave gifts, you could not, the packaging was more incomparable. It was so, perfectly selected, perfectly put together. You didn't want to open the present. It was so nice. Everything she did. And there's just so much, when you look at it, I don't have to look at it. Who did that? This is amazing. It feels such appreciation for someone who went to the trouble to put it together like that. But if you look around, Shukadeva Goswami says, look at nature. Who packaged all this for you? Who put that, that fruit inside that packaging, and then said, here's an extra seed inside in case you want a tree that can make a lot more of this. You can feed a village or a whole country on these things. I'd like to see a country that just eats avocados. I'd love that. Well, two more.
You said that when you appreciate someone else, you download their qualities.
That's right. And I mentioned Voltaire. It's also, Queen Kunti says, Srimvanti Gayanti Grimanti Sadhava. So in one of her prayers to Krishna, she says, there are different processes of bhakti. So one is Srimvanti, that you're hearing about Krishna. Gayanti, you're singing about Krishna. Grimanti means that you're appreciating that others are doing it. So you might, just think about other devotees doing their service very nicely, even if I feel inept. I can think, these other people are so wonderful the way they do their service, and just appreciate them. And by that, she says, you'll advance. You can go back to the spiritual world just by appreciating, expanding your appreciating capacity. Thank you. Who's next? Yes.
I'm appreciating your point. Appreciating this human form of life for the capacity to appreciate.
Very good. Well done.
Yeah, and it is a special opportunity, as I mentioned in the beginning. That's what it's meant for. It's an opening through which we can develop our appreciating capacity. And see, Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And there's no real meaning to having a Supreme unless there's somebody to appreciate the Supreme. And that's why there are unlimited entities who are little appreciators. And they can go on expanding their appreciating capacity unlimitedly. That's the arrangement. And if you follow the arrangement, then you'll feel blissful all the time. Thank you. 1, 2, 3. Sorry, we'll get to you. I know you raised your hand 3 times. Okay, go ahead.
I want to say thank you for the reminder of being appreciative of tests and challenges.
Yes. Why do you say that?
Thank you for the reminder?
Yeah. I mean, why do you bring that particular point up?
Because I get quite a few of them at my job, and the tests and challenges of moving from California to New York, and I don't think this is working, and getting used to New York all over again, which is a huge challenge for me. And so it's a reminder every day.
Yes.
When I walk out the door.
Yeah, if you look at it in a different way, if you think of that, when these challenges come to me, they are actually coming to me so that I can improve myself, so I can move to a higher level. And any mature person you meet, and mature people are valuable. Every mature person has certainly gone through many, many challenges, and they've dealt with them, and that's why they became mature. So we should take this kind of courage. It requires courage to move through this world, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And the Bhakti scripture is giving us that courage. It says, don't worry. Deal with each challenge as it comes and deal with it spiritually by seeing that it's an opportunity to grow. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yes.
I was going to say the same thing, but...
So it's a common theme, isn't it? Yes.
That's what you said about being appreciative.
Just use the mic.
Just being appreciative, even in frustrating situation. I feel like nowadays we just get angry over like small things, and we just have to like appreciate and just step back and think about the situation as the whole thing.
Yeah, and we may get angry. It's a natural thing, but there's a way in which we have to look for the lesson and see what the lesson is. Remember, I live to be corrected. And the last one. Way over there in the corner. Good.
Hare Krishna Prabhu. It's not a comment, it's more of a question. I feel that, like, you know, I find that giving up grudge is not so easy, actually.
Giving what?
Giving up grudge is not that. Grudges is not that easy. I try to associate, when I'm suffering, I try to associate a reason with the suffering, and that reasoning points to some situation and the people associated with that situation. Then I try to like see them as the cause of my suffering. So, I try to relate the events. Then, although I try to say theoretically that it's they are not the cause, but still that kind of, some kind of anger or something is still left over, I think.
Yeah, you make a good point. And that is, it's not, although I made it seem that way, and I did so for an effect, it's not necessarily a mechanical process. That's why it's very important to have one's own home spiritual practice, something you do personally every day, to become aware of the fact that you are a spiritual living entity and that you have a connection to our original divine source, Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That can very specifically be done through the basic processes of bhakti. One of them is repeating the divine names of the Supreme. And in the Maha Mantra, you're saying Hare Krishna Rama, these three names. And by repeating the mantra and listening to it very carefully, there's a kind of a spiritual energy that you'll get. It's called, there's two energies actually that will help you deal with these issues like grudges. One is special knowledge, to see the difference between what's important and what's not important. And the other is a kind of perspective, a wider perspective of the world that means like, why does it matter so much? There are bigger things. So by chanting Hare Krishna, you get a much broader perspective, and you also get a kind of a spiritual power where you're able to let go of things that are less important than others. Even though you know it, sometimes you can't do it, right? So you need that extra spiritual help. And that's one of the things that happens when one chants with attention. Just chanting Hare Krishna mantra. In fact, the Srimad Bhagavatam says, Vasudeva Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayojita Janayat Yashu Vairagyam Gyanam Chayara Haitukam. When you do direct practice of bhakti, you get what you need to do things like give up grudges. And it will surprise you when it happens. Because we think, where did that come from? Well, I couldn't do it before, but now I'm able to do it. That's also a gift that comes down to us. So this spiritual practice will give us the ability to enact all these things that we're talking about. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I'm gonna, okay, same question. Okay, perfect. Now, what was the first key to inner fulfillment? Gratitude, yeah. And the second key to inner fulfillment is to unclutter your life. So one time I had a professional organizer come to my house. That's all they do is they're ruthless, unlike me. And so many things come into our life at every minute. Like you, in your home or your living space, wherever you might be, you might notice that it just starts to fill up. Do you notice that, or is it just me? What does it fill up with? Some of you are shaking your head, yes. What do you get?
Junk.
Junk is a general category. What specific things do you consider junk that come into your house?
Decorative
items that you don't even like, right? I mean, somebody might give you a decorative item that they like, but I might not like it. It's like, hey, this is junk. no offense to anybody out there, but... it just is. You know, and then what do you do with it? Because they might come over and say, hey, where's that wicker basket again? And yes, there it is. And one thing after another comes in. In fact, I saw a little cartoon of a mail truck. A U.S. mail drives around. And it said on the side, junk mail. It used to say U.S. mail. But nowadays, practically the only thing that's delivered are bills and these... unlimited junk mail. Some of you are shaking your head. You notice that? Yeah. So that comes in. There's lots of unlimited things that come in, not just into our homes, our living space, our car, our pockets, but also into our minds. We take in so many things. You just walk around. People say, here, listen to this. What about that? You know, hey, did you see that guy? And next thing you know, you got junk in you. So one of the items that Rupa Goswami, the great master of bhakti, says is important to the practice is to unclutter your life. He calls atyahara. Actually, the word means extreme eating. It's like an Olympic sport. Extreme eating or extreme collecting. So atyahara means that you have to unclutter your life. Get rid of stuff that you don't need. And so this professional organizer that came into the house, she was looking around our office, and she said, you know what that is, and this, and that? You know, she said, do you need this or this? And no, we don't really need it. He said, all this stuff together is what you call visual noise. It's in your purview every day, you don't even notice it, but it's slowing you down. It's a cacophony of visual sound that is actually disturbing your consciousness and preventing you from focusing and appreciating what's naturally around you. It's just too much. So, externally, it means you have to be very careful to prioritize what you actually need. Get rid of the stuff you don't need. There's a lesson in it. I often see, I can't live without this. What if I get rid of it? Okay, so finally, somehow or other, I get rid of it. And then, you know what happens after that? I'm still alive. That's a revelation. It's like, I got rid of it. It's like, I lived. You know, my mind was saying, if you give that away, you're going to really, I don't know what's going to happen. But I give it away, I get rid of it, whatever, it's gone, and I feel like, I feel better, and I'm still alive. So if you practice this, you know, get rid of things you don't need, and see if you're not still alive. There's a sense of fulfillment in that, because you start to think, like, well, I don't need stuff. It's not so much what I have, it's what I am that really counts. And when you can be self-contained, and you're like, everything I need is already here within me, and I have a mantra I can carry around, that's enough. Just keep the mantra. Everything else, you know, start distancing myself. Unless I really need something, then it becomes a burden to me. And those things you need, it doesn't mean if you need lots of stuff, keep lots of stuff. But don't carry around things you don't need. So now what about the internal things that we pick up? Here's a technique that works very well for me, because I notice that in any given moment, my mind is going between two realms, and one of them is the realm of anxiety. And I wondered, any of you ever enter into that realm? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Okay, so Stephen Covey, in his book called 7 Secrets of Highly Effective People, gave a little, the simplest of graphs that I've ever seen in my life. But it is the most effective way to overcome internal clutter. And so what he gives us is two circles, one within the other. The internal circle is called your circle of influence. Say, circle of influence. That means something you can do something about, right? Are there, how many things do you think you could do something about in your life? Very few. It's a smaller circle. And now, outside the small circle, there's a huge circle, and that's called my circle of concern. Now, his point is, when you move outside your circle of influence in your mind, and you go into the circle of concern, this is the cause of anxiety and loss of fulfillment in life, because there's nothing you can do about it. And if you categorize things, you look at them very carefully as you move through the world, moment to moment, analyze how your mind goes into the anxiety mode, and then say, is that in my circle of influence, or isn't that in my circle of concern? If there's something you can do about it, then go ahead. And if there's nothing you can do about it, then let it go. This is one of the ways to prioritize, categorize, then prioritize the various thoughts, desires, circumstances in life, and then not let them clutter up your life. Because how many trying circumstances can any one person handle? That's a real question. How many, numerically, approximately, in a given day? What's that? I was thinking like one or two at the most. But what if I get 5 or 6 or 10 or 100? What if I look at the newspaper, and there's on the front page of the newspaper, there's 12 things that are very disturbing to me, but I can't do anything about them. What should I do? What do you think? Stop reading the paper, yes? Transfer it over, yeah. So the third way to unclutter your life is to make a map. There's an old saying, don't greet the dawn without a map. There's something very clarifying about having a plan for what you're going to do for the day, and if you write it down, you'll find an immediate sense of energy in your life. Like if you start the day and you write down the certain things that you need to do for the day, and just make it the simplest of plans, you'll notice it. Once you write it down, then you'll feel energized to move forward. And that helps you to stay focused and uncluttered, because there's so many other things that will come into your life demanding attention. But if you already make a stand and you've planned it out for yourself, then you'll remain in that uncluttered state. And now we'll take a few reflections. What was the second key to inner fulfillment? Uncluttered life. What was the first one? Okay, so what are some of the points from the second one? Reflect back. Tell me three of the points. Yes. Here comes the mic.
It's not what I have, but what I am.
It's not what I have, but what I am, yes.
And may I ask a question as well?
Yes.
Well, and a comment. So there's a professional organizer. She's a Japanese lady who made a big name for herself. And her mantra is, does this spark joy? So she asks people to get rid of things that don't spark joy. And that just seemed synchronistic to what you were saying. And then my question is, what if we're good at making plans to meet the day and not very good at finding the discipline to follow through with the plans that we have?
Well, it's a discipline just to write them down. It's often that once you write them down, it can become overwhelming, perhaps. I mean, it you have to really look at the reason why you're undisciplined. Oftentimes, we're undisciplined for various reasons. So everyone has a different reason. Do you know why you're undisciplined? Why you can't get things done that you wrote down?
I think some of it must be laziness. And the other, I just can't seem to connect. No.
The microphone has to be on. Otherwise, the people at home can't hear it. Hold it close, because it's really low volume.
So laziness.
That's better.
And the others, I can't seem to connect. Why?
Laziness is also a broad category, but I can give you my personal realization about laziness, procrastination. Oftentimes, when let's say I have three things to do, and I just don't want to do them, there's a reason for it. Oftentimes, it's because I don't know what to do next. And if I figure out what it is I have to do next, instead of what the outcome is, which seems very difficult, then I can at least start moving forward. So if you start moving in small steps, it makes things a little more believable that you can do it. Take the next step that is moving towards that. Like, for instance, if I'm sitting in my room and the place is a mess and I think I should clean this up or even write it down. But then it's too much. I just think, like, I don't feel like I don't have time to clean this whole thing, or I don't even feel like moving. Then instead of trying to clean the whole room, I just pick up one pencil. I say, okay, I'll make a deal. I'll just pick up one pencil. How about that? And that's even hard, right? You get across the room, I barely pick it up, put it in the place where it goes. But next thing, you have some momentum. You can start moving towards the next thing. So take smaller steps. And try to do the next thing that's actually necessary to move you in the direction rather than trying to do the whole thing. It's a big topic. A couple other things that you heard from this section. Yes. 1, 2.
You mentioned even after letting go of the thing that you feel you can't live without, you're still alive.
Yeah. That's a powerful revelation. Oftentimes, for instance, when people give donations, it's going through their head, it's 1,000, no, let's do 500, 750, back, forth. And then finally, you know, they let go and they said, you know, this is a good cause, I'll give a donation. And right afterwards is, you know, a burst of energy. They feel satisfied, happy that, I did something. I'm bigger than I was before. I let something go. I gave it away.
And there's a revelation in that. Often those people are going around saying, yeah, everyone should give more. They feel that they grew. Thank you. Nice point. Two more. One, two.
Hare Krishna. You had mentioned the Atyahara.
Yes.
And that was the too much neediness and materialism or...
extreme eating. Ahara means eating, and ati means extreme. So it's extreme eating or extreme collecting, or like keeping more things than you need, or eating more than you need. Yeah, yes. And last one.
You spoke about visual noise.
What's that?
Visual noise.
Yeah, what
and
about
how
that?
It disturbs our and interrupts our consciousness, the same as noises. Sound.
Yes, that's right. And oftentimes I get used to all these things collecting in my life and I forget they're even there, but they have a heavy weight. They're weighty, and they obstruct my ability to feel contentment, to be focused, to move forward in my life. So the great teachers of bhakti, Rupa Goswami as an example, is very practical. He says, you know, unclutter your life and you'll start to feel naturally more contented inside by being clean, uncluttered. So that's the second key to inner fulfillment. What was the first? Correct. Second? And the third has to do with attention. I like this subject matter. It's almost an omnibus subject for me because it applies in so many places, including how we're feeling fulfilled. And let me just tell you why attention is so interesting to me. It's because I don't exactly even know what it is. You talk about attention. We talk about it all the time. Like, what's a phrase you use to talk about attention? Pay attention. What does that mean exactly? There's a value to it. I mean, you're paying something, right? You just paid attention. Like, how much should you pay? Now I'm gonna make a bold statement. It's the most valuable thing that we have. There's nothing more valuable than our attention. That's what we have. All the other things that we say we have, we really don't have a choice of where they go. They can come and go as they please, and they will. But our attention, this connects to an even deeper topic, which is free will. And this is the greatest gift of all. And what is it that we execute with our free will? It's where we place our attention. I get to choose from moment to moment where I place it. And now comes the profound part about attention, and that is that where your attention goes, your energy flows. And when you look at something, it changes it because you're powerful. Your consciousness can project itself into the world and change the things that you look at. And so the way we use our attention has a profound effect on our relationships, has a profound effect on the content of our hearts and minds. Let me prove how this is true. So relationships, this is one of the greatest sources of contentment in life. In fact, as Srila Prabhupada mentions at the beginning of the Nectar of Devotion, it's what everyone lives for. Why do I work so hard? Because I have a relationship somewhere. That's what makes me fulfilled. So what makes relationships go? Well, many things. There's much that can be said about it. But one of the primary things, if you reduce it, is attention. I'll give you an example. I was at a very tedious meeting in India earlier this year. And I was on a break, sitting out in a little patio area where they have a place where you can look out into space and forget about all the problems in the world and you know, have a cold beverage, some sugarcane juice perhaps. And so I was sitting out there minding my own business, just trying to unclutter my mind, and a very enthusiastic colleague came over and sat next to me. And that was the last thing I was thinking about at that time, was talking to somebody. However, I had a choice at that very instant. I thought, I can give him half attention. I can ignore him altogether. I could tell him, you know, I'm not interested. There would be consequences to all those things.
And then I thought, all right, I'm going to turn my full attention. It was a conscious choice, deliberate. I actually turned my chair and faced him and looked right at him. And he jumped. and he was visibly moved and surprised. He actually said, thank you for doing that. Or he said, I'm so grateful. And what had I actually done? All I had done was just transfer my attention from space to looking squarely at him. That's all I did. And he expressed it as, look what you've done for me. And you know what happened? Of course, he told me some very interesting things, and I'm glad I did. But the long-term result was, he considers me a good friend now, and I consider him a good friend. How did that happen? All I did was give him my attention. That was it. And so in relationships in life, you might, for instance, have a spouse. That could possibly be, right? Say yes. Thank you. So the difference in the quality of the relationship, I would argue, has so much to do with attention. I can give half attention. In fact, I could give a half attention to my spouse throughout a 24-hour period. Is that possible? Half attention? How about for a week? I mean, I'm listening, but I'm kind of thinking of something else at the same time. That's what I mean by half attention. Possible? Rasnath's working with me over here, so I'm dealing with him. working together. So the how about a year? Possible? 10 years? 20? 100 years? All the way as possible. In fact, the Bhagavatam says, better a moment of full consciousness than a whole life of distracted attention here, there, and everywhere. Better to be focused for 1 second on our highest goal, our highest relationship with Krishna. And so, how we organize and direct our attention will have a direct effect on our relationships. And now, as far as our inner content and our level of contentment, I said where attention goes, energy flows. The Sri Upanishad, one of the oldest bhakti literatures in the world, says, Anyadeva hur sambhavad, anyadahur sambhavad. Iti shushumadhiranam, yenas tadvijachakshade. And this means that where you place your attention will directly affect the outcome of your life overall. And if you direct your attention towards very spiritually content-rich information, sound vibration, association, so forth, it fills you up with a kind of energy that will make you feel content always. Not just content, but actually like make you want to feel like you want to dance at 4:30 in the morning. And who does that in New York? So if you simply redirect your attention to spiritual sound vibration, then the result will be it will come into your heart and mind, it will fill you up, and your content will change. And if you don't like what you're being subjected to in your life, anybody? One person. Two? Can I get a few more recruits? 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. If you don't like what you're being subjected to in life, change the subject. That's your right. You can change the subject at any time. Change the radio station. Change the topic of conversation. Change the reading material. Just change the subject. Change where your attention goes, and you'll find that your level of contentment will drastically change as a result of where you place it. Now we'll take a couple of reflections on this section, or any other for that matter. It's open season because we have 5 minutes left. So please reflect back anything that you're taking away so far from this. If you walk out of here and somebody grabs you by the arm out there and says, what was that guy talking about in there? What's the one thing that you're going to tell him? Rasanath Prabhu. I'm still working with Rasanath. Where's the microphone? There it is. The only thing you really have to give is your attention. Is it
on
now?
The only thing. No, it's on.
Say it again.
The only thing that you really have to give is your attention.
Yes. That's our main, going out on a limb, only asset is our attention and where we place it. Place it wisely, and you'll find great rewards. Notice it. Do it deliberately. More reflections. Anything you heard? What's the one thing you're taking away? Keep it in your pocket. Yes.
Hare Krishna. I wanted to ask how we can understand where we have to put our attention, because there are so many different things which seems important.
So in the practice of bhakti, the great masters have gone out of their way to catalog the places where you can put your attention. So there's 64 main places, and they're all nice. Good news. None of them have to do with walking on coals or, you know, lying on a bed of nails or tying your arm to a tree for 10 years or something like that. He told me today about yogis. They keep their arm up for 10 years, you know, to overcome desire. You don't have to do that. They're all sweet, nice. They all have to do with singing, art, music, cooking, stuff we like. So 64 items, right? And then Lord Chaitanya, foreseeing that you know, human beings are busy and they like things neatly packaged, he said out of the 64, there's five. That has to do, number one, repeating the names of God in the form of the mantra. That's one thing. Then he said, come and see the deity and worship the deity. Next is, hear Srimad Bhagavatam. These are very specific things that are saying, put your attention here. Associate with devotees and live in a holy place. Five things. Then he said, okay, if that's too many, then just do the one. Chant Hare Krishna. Chant the mantra. So they, the shastras, the great teachers, Krishna, they give very specific places where you can do it. And bhakti is very specific. It says, do this, these things. And you don't have to do them all day long, especially if you're all busy. But if you do them once every day, that'll be sufficient to get an infusion that will change your life and change the content of your heart. Have time for two more. Yes. Mike's coming back.
I like where your attention goes, your energy flows.
Oh, I'm glad you like that. That's one of my main mantras in life.
I might put it on a t-shirt. I like it.
You put it on a t-shirt, I'll buy one. Yeah, where attention goes, energy flows. Everyone say.
Attention goes, energy flows.
Yeah, and this is the best time management tool that you can have. Just remember, wherever you're placing your attention, your energy is going to go in that direction. Decide. You get to choose where you're going to put it. That's your asset. That's your main asset. Decide where you want to place your attention. Plan ahead and say, this is where I'm going to place my attention. Something else comes up to distract you, say, nuh-uh. I'm going to keep my attention right here. And that's where your energy is going to go. So Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Yanti deva vratave devan, pitran yanti patirvata, bhutani yanti bhuteja, yanti mam, yajino pimam. He says you can go wherever you like. You're free to move about the universe. There's unlimited places that you can go. You're a free soul, actually. But all you have to do is place your attention there. He said you place your attention on going to... anyway, he names various places in the universes that you can go, various destinations. You can fill in the blanks for yourself, but wherever you place that, that's why in bhakti there's a specific and deliberate way in which we put our attention in the spiritual world, those images from the spiritual world that we see here, and the altar, and all these things, if you keep your attention there and you keep coming back to it, that's where you'll go. And that's the point Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, it's up to you. He doesn't condemn anybody. He just lays it all out. See, here's all your choices. But if you make this choice, then you'll be happy. We thank you very much. Yes. Last point? Yes. Okay. Last point of the night. We still have 40 seconds.
I like the way we use our attention has a profound effect on our relationships. It reminds me of that, I believe he's a Buddhist monk, Thich Nhat Hanh. He says the greatest gift you can give another is your attention. And it made me think of what attention I am not giving Krishna.
Now we see why we gave you the last word. That was so articulate and helpful for us to take away. Thank you very much. And I'm deeply touched that you took this time to come here and we'll remember this night. And thank you. Hare Krishna.
Hey, Natari Armarman. Natari Armarman. Natari Armarman.